Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla-Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 47. And I've got to say, mate, it was a bit of a chore getting down here tonight, going past where you are. They're putting in a new petrol station and brought traffic almost come to a halt around there, around the cones and things like that. It was tough getting through there today.
Very busy. Speaking of chores, Adam,
yep.
Can we hurry up and get this podcast done? Because I've got to put in some hours of school reports tonight, Adam.
You almost told me not to come. You almost said, look, I can't put up with you this week. I've got to do reports. I can't put up with you as well. That was almost the words out of your mouth, I think.
And you finished yours.
I have. Look, I got mine in on Friday last week, and I've already got them back, thankfully. So I've got a few little minor changes, and then they get printed next week.
Well, each year is different, isn't it, Adam, around reporting time in terms of our personal lives. Sometimes you have free, everybody likes to have a free weekend, don't they?
Yes.
Somewhere. I don't have any, so I'm churning away probably 2 or 3 hours a night. On weeknights at the moment, and we are recording the podcast tonight, and I'll be putting in a few hours afterwards. So there's no rest for the wicked.
No, there's no rest, and it's funny because we don't want to pat ourselves on the back, so to speak, but people do ask us a lot of the time, you know, and we brought this up before, how do you find the time to do it? But it's not a chore for us. It's something that we were even saying off air that talking about school and doing things, but it kind of takes your mind off it a little bit. You're not worrying about all those things. It's kind of an hour where we sit down and do this stuff and takes your mind off it a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's the process, isn't it? It's the actual, because it is sort of a release from work. It's the setting up of the equipment and talking about what we're going to do and what we're going to say. And it is. It's a process that it's kind of a nice little hobby in a way to take your mind off work.
It is. And look, I liken reports at the moment to dieting and the podcast of a chocolate bar. You know, you're on that diet sometimes, like, now stuff this. I'm going to have a Mars bar. I've been good for 6 days on my diet. I'm going to have a day off. I'm going to have my chocolate bar. This is how the podcast is. Now stuff the reports, stuff all the meetings, stuff everything else. We're going to do our podcast and enjoy ourselves. That's kind of like what it is to me at the moment.
That's funny, Adam. I think we've just found a new topic for a future podcast. Diets on school staff.
Don't get me started.
No, well, let's not get started.
No, because I don't want to talk about the blinking fig and grass things that all the staff at my school have while I'm sitting there churning down a donut. I mean, come on. What's going on here?
Well, we've got some interesting topics tonight, and we're actually quite pumped up to really sink our teeth into a couple of these topics. So, we're 3 weeks out from the end of term, Adam? Let's get into it.
So, Rick, first topic for the night is, I think I've said before, I love to check out what's going on in the world of education across the world.
That's kind of your role in the podcast.
It is a little bit of my role. I am one of those internet wanderers, I suppose you could say.
A lurker. But,
a lurker, that's the one. Not a troll, though.
No.
But one of the things that came up recently is in England, they're really pushing parents and actually paying parents £600 to, and I'm putting in quotes here, to help their children with their homework. So what it is parents are being handed £600 to actually attend classes that teach them how to help their children with reading and writing, and prompting, you know, classes and families and things to actually say that they're being paid to do the right thing. Now, this really struck a chord with me because I know in our Prep to Two area recently, talking to a few teachers, you get a lot of parents who have really good intentions. They go home, they want to read and do these things, but then they'll want to come in and talk to you about it, and they'll tell you things that they've been doing at home that make you cringe a little bit, as if because it's going against what you've been teaching them in class. And a case in point was a parent that came in recently to say, I've been reading at home, but you know, I'm trying to get them to understand the words, so I've been covering up the pictures. I don't want them using the pictures and covering it up. And inside, you're cringing. You're thinking, no, don't do that. We want the kids. We want to encourage the kids to use the pictures to support, to help them to understand the words and to reread for meaning and to do those things. And you can see they're meaning well, but they just don't understand the ways to do it. So, Rick, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think this is an initiative that could take on around the world, or is it probably going a little bit too far?
Well, possibly. I just want to step back a little bit to something you just said before about how the parents are meaning well.
Yep.
Because they are, aren't they?
And yes.
Firstly, if parents are actually jumping in and reading with their kids, then fantastic. Mm. That's definitely going to support their learning, isn't it?
It's half the battle. Half the battle
it
done.
It is. And we also know that a lot of people in the entire population have opinions on how to teach, even when they don't have any training. So you also have those parents maybe coming in saying, well, I've done this, maybe based on something they've read in the newspaper or something, you know. So we've got that as well.
Yes.
So going forward to your main question, I think there is definite validity in parents being taught by experts, such as teachers and other professionals, how to assist their children with reading and writing. I think that is absolutely valid. Yep. In fact, our school, and I know your school's done something similar, has Early in the year, one of the leading teachers runs parent helper sessions for parents to come in during the morning in the staff room and shows them how to ask proper questions during reading. And I just think that's great. And I know that there's been a lot of parents who have taken up the offer of that program in the school.
Absolutely.
But they're not paid £600, Adam. So now you and I talked off air about how education standards, we don't know a lot about them, but must be different in the UK compared to us. Perhaps it doesn't say in the article that you shared, but perhaps there is a shortage of, maybe they're seeing, they're finding that maybe students are not being supported much at home. Mm. Maybe there was some research done. It's quite a big incentive. It does say that the £600 is for them to attend, it's like a reward to attend a parenting academy where they'll learn how to improve their children's skills. And I'm not, look, I guess if research shows that this could really help, then I guess it's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a lot of money though, coming from the government, I guess, and well, it's a taxpayer funded program.
It is. I think they've got $125 million in that sort of government funding to do it. But I think what I really like about it, I think it would necessarily catch on in Australia, because I think a lot of schools are beginning to do what you said, offering those things at the start of the year to sort of coach parents up a little bit, because parents also love to come into classrooms and it helps them. You know, if they're going to take a guided group or do something to help out, they need to know what to ask the students. Yeah. But at home, and I think you would agree across the board, some parents don't want to get involved because they don't have the confidence. No. You know, what happens if they bring home even a maths question or do these things and I don't know what to do? You know what? I just won't do it. I'll just let them go and I won't have any input because A, I don't know what I'm going to do, and B, I don't want to look like a fool because I don't know what it is and that sort of stuff. So I think there's also an element of that confidence, building the confidence up in the parents to say, you know what, take charge, you can jump in there and you can do the right things to support your child's learning.
I think we also have to touch on socioeconomic status. You and I have worked in schools where there's a lot of parent support, particularly in the early years.
Sure.
We have friends who work in other parts of the greater Geelong area that work in schools where parent support would be really lacking.
Yes.
And I'd be interested to know about this program in the UK, whether it's targeting certain areas where maybe there is that low uptake of parent support. It does say that it's going to target 1,500 families around 14 primary schools in Middlesbrough and Camden in North London. So I just wonder whether they are areas where there's a great need.
It jumps out, the payment jumps out at you, doesn't it? To say that, well, to get some of these parents along that may not have the want to come along or the time, and because I think they're offering even things for the other kids, you know, some food and things like that to keep them busy, will pay you to come along. You know, these families who may be from lower socioeconomic things will say $600 to come along for 9 minutes and learn a little bit about that sort of stuff. That's pretty good. However, on the flip side of that, is it going to be a bad thing as well? Some parents are going to go, gee, $600, I'll just come along and sit up the back and have a bit of a listen, take my $600, go home and not do a thing as well.
Pounds.
And it's kind of $600 down the drain. I mean, there's all those things across the board, isn't there? And I think what our schools do in offering that, you are, with no money, you are actually going to get a lot of parents along who really want to do it. So that's the key, isn't it?
It is. And but they would have to be, if they wanted just like the money, they would have to be still accountable for their child, you know. And I think there'd have to be protocols in place to follow things up if they weren't volunteering.
Attendance maybe?
Yeah, perhaps attendance. Yeah. Look, we know that, like, a lot of, getting back to the parent helper program at our school, it's goodwill. And there's been a huge turnout of parents, and I've spoken to some staff who've said there's been a market improvement in the way that parents are helping, and not just obviously helping their own child or their child's friends. They're, you know, they've got the skills now to help anyone. So
that's right.
It's great. So, like, I guess we'd love to hear from other schools. Yeah. From other schools. I mean, do you have a parent helper like program to support them in your schools? What happens?
Yeah. Or is there a problem? Is there not enough input? And do you find that parents at home aren't offering the right sort of support to their students? So we'd love to hear from both sides of the coin.
Big headline in The Age, Adam, during the week. Schools hit a wall with open plan classrooms. And it was shared on Facebook, actually shared by a family member of mine who had children at a previous school that I worked at, and I appreciate her sharing it. And a lot of friends of hers, I assume parents, have gone hard on the issue. I'll come back to that in a second. I just wanted to touch... I just wanted to go back in time a little bit, Adam, and like, this is my 10th year in the job, as you know. And my first year in the job, I worked in a double portable with a really great mentor I've mentioned before. And we had a walkway in between the two portables where you could get the two grades together.
Yep.
But after that, the principal at my old school at the time started knocking down walls in other parts of the school. And from 2007 to this very day, I've worked in open plan or flexible learning spaces, whatever you want to call them. I've yep. worked in those spaces for 9 years out of my 10. And it's been, oh, except for the year that I've talked about many times. We talked about it last Christmas with yep. John Pierce in yes. the 3/4 of a year in the multi-purpose room. But that's another story.
Yep.
Anyway, so this is what I'm used to, Adam. And, and I've been through many successes and some failures over the years working yep, in these sure. spaces. And one thing it comes down to is, I think, not just students and how students work in these spaces, but collegiality between staff mm. in the team. And I'll just go back to the article. It mentions how a lot of the open plan classrooms were built, particularly the state-of-the-art ones, were built as part of the building yes. education revolution yep. that the Rudd government put in. So there's a lot of buildings in our Victorian schools like that. It says that, there was a study done by Macquarie University and a PhD candidate, Kiri Mealings, who's quoted as saying that these spaces are definitely not suitable for critical listening activities with young kids. The research was released this year and it said 50 to 70% of surveyed children said they could not hear their teacher very well or at all in open plan classrooms. Now, the rest of the article touches on a lot of the negatives to do with open plan classrooms. Some of them are valid, Adam.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Yeah.
50, 70% said they could not hear their teacher very well or at all. Are these teachers up the front whispering or something? I mean, seriously, without them going, now come on, children, settle down now, and the kids up the back can't hear. I mean, sorry, I'm really sorry to stop your momentum there, but again, it jumps out at me to go, now come on. I mean, what are they sitting all the way, 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 way across the room and can't hear it? I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't name a lot of schools where, like in the research, yeah. that had these issues, because another issue that involves staff said that, in some of the, it calls them poorly designed classrooms. It doesn't say all of them are. That yep. it says in some of these classrooms, staff were struggling with vocal health problems, and that some teachers were resigning and having to take lots of days off. I got a bit of a chuckle at
come
that.
Come on.
Now, you've worked in one of these spaces.
Yeah, I have.
How many students in a cohort in the space you've worked in? I think before.
So I've only had the opportunity to work in that sort of environment for 2 years. And I moved obviously out of that into a portable classroom this year. There was probably upwards of 80 students, if you're sort of 25, so that's probably 75, okay. 75 so, to 80 students across the board there.
Okay, so this year I've about the same. So we've got yep. 3 Year 6 classes up one end, and there's 81 students
okay.
exactly
yep.
down the other end. And if you look at the building I'm in, it's kind of shaped like a butterfly from above.
Okay.
So if you can imagine a butterfly's wings with like the body
sure.
in the middle.
Yes.
The body in the middle is kind of like the conduit.
Yeah, the communal space?
Yeah. yeah. Oh, no, it's a very small communal space.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, noise doesn't travel from one end to the other
sure.
so much.
Yep.
So there's 3 Year 5 classes down the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about 85, I think, of those.
Yep.
Now, in this article, it says that at Laverton Peter 12 College, about 300 students learn in the same open plan space. Now, at my old school, we had the Year 3 4s in a giant Burr building,
yep.
which was like a rectangle shape.
Yep.
It wasn't like the butterfly shape. There were about 150 in that space,
yeah.
and that still was big enough to work well. Now, I'm really, look, getting back to Facebook, some of the parent comments that my family member was sharing were like, yes, finally, like these have never worked. My child, it's too loud.
Yeah.
One of them said, I couldn't hear my child read when I used to go in and do one-on-one reading.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what year level they were talking about there, but I've mainly worked with the older year levels in the year.
Yep.
I'm against a lot of the stuff in this article. Yes, I haven't yet seen anyone who does it absolutely perfectly, like doing a program in these spaces. However,
sure.
right now, I think we at our school have got a good thing going. Now, a lot of it has to do with the kind of team you've got around you, I think.
Yep.
If you've got a team of staff working in that cohort who are all on board together,
yep.
and you've got a routine of when you're loud and when you're quiet, it works a treat.
Yeah.
If you set up expectations with the kids
yep.
heavily at the start of the year and you pull them up hard constantly, we've done this, the rewards come later.
Mm.
The kids, because it says in some of the comments I've read is that, oh yeah, kids are distracted. They're looking around at everyone else in the other classrooms.
Yep.
I've rarely had that issue
because
the kids
Me
get
too.
Used to the space.
Yep. Can I throw this to you then? I think you're spot on. I think the expectations is really, really important, setting that up. With that expectation, do you think that the open plan classrooms should always be tailored more towards, in primary schools I'm talking here, the 3 to 6 cohort? Do you think it should be more limited to that one because the prep to twos find it a little bit hard and it, you know, maybe to keep those expectations and to be a little bit more, you know, less distracted and things. Should schools push more towards the 3 to 6, or do you think it can still work down in the lower end?
In the past, I would have said yes, push more to the 3 to 6, but now, no, I don't think
okay.
so. I think once you get kids in there and you set those expectations from the start of the year, Like, they will adapt. Mm. We've talked about before how adaptable kids are to any kind of situation. And right now, there's some maintenance works going on in our school. Yep. The entire prep, and I should have mentioned this at the outset, the entire prep cohort has come down to our building and they are in there with us.
Oh, really?
The year sixes. And I was watching, we were doing a whole group thing with our grade sixes yesterday. Mm. And one of the prep teachers was taking a little... read a little picture storybook session with her prep class, and they were focused on the story. Mm. None of them were looking around.
It's the expectations, isn't it?
The expectations. Yeah. And look, sure, you know, sometimes it depends on the type of kids you've got, the type of clientele, but I just think they're, look, if I'm not saying that these buildings are perfect, and I know how difficult it must be in some schools, but I just think that if you've got the right team and the right kids, and you set expectations, that you can make it work.
Absolutely. And look, I'm happy to just to jump in before we finish, because we've spoken off air as well that I see the benefit in them, but I've actually never been a big fan from when I started teaching. I know when I went in there a few years back, I was really worried, because I really like having my own class in my own little area to teach them and to have that opportunity to kind of shut the doors and do those things and really get down to it. Because I thought, you know, being in that bigger area, it's, you want to try and get down there, and there's a kid yelling over there, there's a teacher trying to do this there, and it takes away that distraction. But I will say, I really came around, because when we went in there, I was in there with 1-5-6 class with 2-3-4s. We sat them down from the start of the year and had an expectation of no running. When we mix, you go outside the doors and walk around to the other sides. We had, you know, this respect for the middle space and the respect for the area, that to the point where our principal would bring tours in and would love to come in because the kids were working so well, but working together as well. But it wasn't like a zoo or something like that going on, you know?
And we've got a spirit card system at our school where, like, it's you put the trust back to the kids to do all that as well. So it's not necessarily putting in sets of rules and saying, you must obey or else. It's about giving them trust to say, you get these privileges. Mm. It might be choosing where you sit if you do the right thing. And I think there are, like, we could talk about it for a while.
It's a great discussion.
I would love to hear, and we might talk a bit more about it in a couple of weeks, but we'd love to hear open plan classrooms and flexible learning space stories from your school. Please share. It's a big topic.
So, Rick, I actually want to bring up my daughter for this third topic tonight, and the discussion my wife and I have had recently about we don't want our daughter to get sucked into being, everything's technology-based all the time. So one thing we do sometimes to get a little bit of respite, I must admit, our daughter's very well-behaved, but sometimes we put her in a standing device that sort of goes in front of the TV. She loves the TV. She's obsessed with, actually, at the moment, she's only almost 8 months, the Big Bang Theory, the theme song for that one. Whenever that's on TV and it comes on, she'll stop anything she's doing and turn around and stare at the TV. Absolutely loves it. But it comes up to an article that you have brought up this week, and something we spoke about last week, about tablets are reshaping the way preschoolers develop, play and learn. And the fact that they're getting things, particularly tablets and phones, in their hands very, very early on. And it's actually getting to the point where they're learning to swipe and download apps and control volume and things well before some of their other developmental stages, which is tying their shoelaces, knowing how to be organized, you know, cutting and doing all those things. And I actually think that can be a little bit of a problem. And it's something I know that the wife and I have spoken about, that we don't want to have with our daughter. We want to have a mix when she gets to primary school.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I think that's probably an issue that a lot of parents deal with. And I heard Stephen Heppel talk about once at a conference about get a device into a child's hand as quickly as you can. Then I've heard other people speak, and other ones saying, well, I've heard people talk, you know, parent experts I've read say, you know, there needs to be a balance. And the article touches on some British research, a survey of 2,000 parents saying that kids as young as, it says, kids, a third of kids under 5 own their own tablet. Now, there is a link to Australia. Australian child technology expert Christy Goodwin says, like what you said, that the widespread use of tablets by preschoolers is changing the way that they develop.
Yes.
I think, you know, getting back to your daughter, I think there needs to be a fine balance.
Absolutely.
There? Because what it does mention is that a lot of parents do give devices to their young, really young child as a pacifier in these days, don't they?
Yep.
To keep them quiet, because the entertainment factor they do. Mm. Whereas a lot of kids perhaps aren't using them for creative play.
Yep.
And obviously there's so many apps and things that they can do that sort of creative stuff with.
That's right. And that's what you want to encourage them to do. And I think also it becomes a learned habit as well, that at home, if they muck up at home, an iPad's thrown in their face, go, just go and sit in the corner and play with this, and off they go. They get to school and see iPads, and they think, well, if I muck up here, they're just going to give me an iPad to pacify me, and I can go and sit in the corner and play games while everyone's doing their reading. And I think that's what some teachers do as well. They get sucked into, here you go, just go on. If you're good for 5 minutes, you're going to have 10 minutes on the iPad. We want to get away from that. We want to actually give it to them to learn things. And like you're right, be creative and to learn some of those things while also still going outside and learning to ride a bike and kick a football and do those things as well.
Yeah, and some schools are doing this really well already. Like, and we know, we've talked about it before, and it's there on Twitter and online to see. There's so many schools who are doing great stuff with devices.
Absolutely.
And kids are coming to school in prep with skills such as movie making, creating songs, creating presentations. You know, there's a lot of skills that they have that sometimes they probably don't think, oh, I can use this at school. It's still an entertainment thing. So I think you and I are probably in good positions with our own children, if I'm lucky enough to have them, is that we can kind of guide them to that creative play.
Mm.
Down the bottom of the article, it says one of the experts has said that there's kind of three broad types of apps that are downloaded on kids' devices a lot. There's the consumption apps, such as YouTube. There's the creation apps. He mentions Toca Boca. I don't know much about that one. Mm. And then there's communication apps, social media, obviously. And parents should try to minimise consumption apps for preschools because it does turn them into digital zombies, and it can.
It can. I mean, how easy is it to bring up YouTube and find a cartoon on there that goes for 20 minutes, plonk them down, off you go, and you go and do your thing, and they just literally sit there and watch it. They're not really taking anything in. He's right in saying that they need to do some of those creation apps, have a really good mix. There's nothing wrong with YouTube and nothing wrong with those in a very small supply, but if you overdo it, I think you're doing more harm, potentially more harm to your child than good.
Well, you mentioned sport before, so you might take your child out and give them a few tips on how to swing a cricket bat at a module, and then let them kind of fail and have successes. So that I can't see why that can't happen like with a device. So you might download an app that helps them create a film, and so you might give them some initial things like that button there will help you put in that video and put some sound in and then let them go.
That's right.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
But why can't, as well, you mentioned cricket, why can't they be out there practicing shots and doing that, and then actually go inside and use YouTube to see the latest Steve Smith video where he talks about technique and the way they play? They're still learning those things, and they go, oh, that's how to do it, and bang, they're back out the door again, back into the backyard practicing those strokes. So it's that sort of encouragement that they can use the consumption for good.
That's right, and that's and they need to know as well that is for good, that what they're doing is for good. And I think that's a really interesting point. So I guess if there's any parent, we know there's a lot of parent listeners out there who listen to our podcast. What are the routines for your, or what were your routines for your young students? Sorry, your young children with their devices. All right, Adam, this is our, well, hopefully this is our third last episode, which means it's your second last anecdote.
It is. I think I'm going to get the new ball for the end of the year. I think I'm going to get the last one, I think.
I think you will, yeah.
I think I will.
So off you go.
Look, we've spoken about reporting and things like that, and the teachers get that look in the eye, don't they? That look in the eye of just, stay away from me, don't talk to me. We spoke about that last week. Mm-hmm. What I want to talk to you tonight about is the staff car park and the problems that can arise in a staff car park. Now, I'm bringing this up because of this time of the year. Not necessarily, nothing's really happened about it today, but we've got a very small car park at school. And sometimes when, you know, you have those days where you're going to do other things within the school and you get some, you know, three or four CRTs in, you've got all the you know, support staff and things, it can get pretty crowded pretty quickly in there.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about how people can get actually very defensive and very protective of what they perceive to be their car park out in the staff car park. Now, there are no names on it apart from the principal and the after-school care coordinator and ours, but people can get protective about, you know, this is where they normally park.
Well, not many schools even have the principal's name on a park, so that's quite a privilege for your principal.
Yes, very. But I agree, because the principal needs to be there and have that spot and get in there and do that sort of stuff. I agree with that. But I don't know, this time of the year, people can get narky in the sense that if you get there a little bit later and there's a few people in your park, you can hear people at the staff room table go, saw you in my spot today over on the other side. Yeah, saying that sort of jokey voice, but it's not a joke. No, they're getting defensive about, that's my spot.
They are dirty underneath.
But do you find as well in the car parking that everyone generally parks in the same spot every day anyway?
They do. It's kind of like habitual, isn't it?
It is.
Do you know, Adam, at the start of this year, I gave up parking in our staff car park.
Really?
Because we've got a larger staff and there were a lot of student teachers.
Yep.
I just gave up, and there has been some swiping going on by accident in our car park.
Really?
It's quite tight. Yeah, people have had their cars swiped.
Jeez.
By certain people. Obviously, not not on purpose, but some careless people, I won't name them. So Adam, I gave up and I park in a nearby street where there's plenty of parking and just have a nice little walk down to the school.
Yeah, okay. Is there any protection? Or do you park under a tree? Like on a hot day, do you get back there and it's just boiling in there?
Yeah,
or?
It can be. There is some tree protection, but sometimes the trees like make a mess and birds put the old droppings down there on there. So I kind of avoid the trees. Yep. I've got lots of car park stories for you, Adam.
Well, come on.
At the old school, I got swiped by a colleague.
Yep.
As I just pulled up.
Yep.
Just pulled up into the park. Just turned the engine off.
Yep.
And this colleague came in to park next to me and pulled out too wide and clonked me on the way in. So I was sitting in there and I rocked. The actual car rocked with me.
Oh, no.
And so, and look, she was fine. And we sorted it out with insurance and all that sort of stuff. But this is barely a week later.
Yeah.
And we had lots of workers coming in and out of the school doing more building works. I noticed in the morning that I was parked right next to quite a large ute.
Mm.
And the ute had squeezed into a space that probably wasn't a great space.
Yep.
When I came out, there was a giant swipe. This is only barely a week later after the car had been repaired from the last swipe from my colleague. Another big swipe on the left-hand side that still exists today because I never found the culprit.
Oh, what? So they didn't even bother to stay behind and leave a note? Did they do anything like that?
No, Adam, they didn't. And I went to my boss and she said, look, you're welcome to go in there and ask them. But there are all these blokes in there. Like, I don't even know if they would have owned up because it might not have been them. But I reckon it was this ute as they were trying to pull out. Because when I came out to see the scratch, the ute had gone.
Mm.
But we can't say to the company, look, someone in your company has swiped us. If the school has been negligent, then you can kind of get the insurance kind of cover. But I was furious at it. That scratch is still on my car today.
Don't blame me. And I'll tell you what, the other thing that infuriates me is parents not only parking in the staff car park, but waiting in the staff car park, particularly if...
That's a
big one. I know this year that we've had PDs and we've had to be there by 4. You literally got to get the kids out, pack up, quickly make sure things are out and go.
You go
out to your car, there is a line of cars there waiting to pick up the kids. You can't get out.
Mm.
You sit there sitting there going, oh, come on, guys. You might have one who can see you, a couple of cars out who will wait, so others will go to let you get out. But parents are told numerous times, don't go into the staff car park. That's where the staff park, we've got to get out. There's things like that. They don't listen. And you can't literally go there and go, right, out you go. You're not meant to be in it. You can't give them a fine or anything like that.
Yep.
And I understand why they do it.
Fine, yeah.
But it's not right.
And you know how, and you mentioned that normally we're only leaving that early when we have to get to a
absolutely,
PD.
But
you know what the parents are thinking when they're seeing us leaving? Oh, look at them leaving early. 3:30 knock off.
Yeah. Just see me the other night when I was there till 6. You know, that sort of stuff. So look, if you've got any stories about your staff car park, things going wrong there, or any side swipes, if anyone saw anyone hit Rick's car, please call us on 1-800-GET-IT-FIXED. So mate, that brings an end to episode 47. And I must say, Kelly Slater is once again sitting in my midst because today was the final day of surfing for you guys.
Well, I took my bodyboard down today, Adam, just to try and rekindle some of the bodyboarding skills from when I was a teenager. But as of this week, as of yesterday, I've made a big breakthrough in my surfing exploits. I was able to catch a few waves and stand.
Fantastic.
One of my kids said, I reckon you were standing in control for 19 seconds on that wave, Mr. KT.
So specific.
How good is that?
That's fantastic.
And I'm not wiping out as hard, Adam. Yep. So the muscles and the bones aren't creaking as much as they were last
week. Were you pushing any kids out of the way? Did you sort of catch that wave and a few of them are trying to catch a bit of a bodyboard and you knock them out of the way and you're out of me way? I've caught a wave.
Not quite, but there was one wave where I was riding it at the same time as one of my expert boys who's a great surfer, and we kind of looked at each other and smiled as we jumped off, and I'm like, hey, that's pretty cool,
very good.
Yeah, it's been a great bonding experience at this time of the year for the year 6. It's so important with only sort of 2.5 weeks to go, Adam.
That's right, mate. So look, we've got 2 episodes to go. We're looking forward to episode 48 next week, and obviously the special Christmas episode, which will be episode 49, where we do have some special guests lined up to join us. We're pretty excited by that.
Special guests and more, Adam. The works are still in the pipeline, aren't they?
They are, mate. So from me, Adam Lavar,
me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been 2 regular teachers.